Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
We acknowledge the traditional owners of country throughout Australia and recognise their continuing connection to land, waters and culture. We pay our respects to their elders past, present and emerging. Hey there, lovely listeners, and welcome back to another electrifying episode of This Song Is Yours. I'm your host, Simon Fink, and today we've got an absolutely special treat for you. Joining us live on the pod today is the incredible Ziggy Ramo. Back by popular demand, Ziggy joins us live from backstage at the WOM Adelaide Festival, where he wowed audiences earlier in the day with his electrifying performance. Now, Ziggy is not just your average musician, he is an absolute force to be reckoned with. He's a songwriter, musician, activist, singer, rapper, all rolled into one. And this year, he's going to expand that list as well as he gears up to drop his highly anticipated new project, Human. In today's episode, we're diving headfirst into Ziggy's world. From his unforgettable performance at WOMAD to the debut of songs from his upcoming project, we'll be uncovering the magic behind his music. We'll also be delving into the creative process behind Human and exploring how Ziggy's artistry has evolved, transforming him from a mere songwriter into an author as well. Plus, we'll be shining a spotlight on the timeless legacy of Bob Marley and the enduring power of his songwriting techniques. We want to give a massive shout out to Taylor from WOMAD for helping us make this interview happen. And folks, don't forget to hit the subscribe button to stay tuned for more captivating conversations on whichever application that you get your podcasts on. Also, be sure to follow us across all of our socials for the latest updates and exclusive content. So let's not keep you any further. Here is our live from WOMAD episode with Ziggy Ramo. Please welcome back to This Song Is Yours, Ziggy Ramo. Ziggy, hello. Welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
My absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for your time today. As we were just kind of discussing, you've joined us in Adelaide at WOMAD Festival on one of the world's hottest days. It's like 40-something degrees today.
Yeah, it's melting. Melting point.
It's a very, very tough day. Not tough day, but I imagine that performing, it's another whole challenge in itself, performing in heat like
this.
Yeah,
we got moved to a different stage.
Yeah, right.
And then we had pretty good coverage for shade, and they had some fans on the stage, and got like a wet towel halfway through. So
nice.
We made it through. It was great.
That's good to hear. How was the crowd this morning?
It was really good. Like I was kind of like, I mean, it's so bad to say, but if it was me and I was coming to a festival at 40 degrees, I don't know, but we were really lucky. We had an awesome turnout and everyone was engaged, and it was great.
That's so cool. That's awesome. Is this first time?
Yeah, this is my first time performing at WOMAD. So.
It's a cool festival in terms of obviously the demographics that you see and the kind of crowds that you get. Did you encounter that with yourself, with your own crowd?
Yeah, definitely. We had like a real mix of people and age, and it was great. It was a really diverse crowd, which is awesome.
That's awesome. That is very good to hear. I know when we did catch up on a previous Zoom call, we were chatting about your most recent record, Sugarcoated Lies,
yes,
which fantastic record,
thank
by
you.
The way. Congratulations again. How has that kind of, I know we spoke, I think, a few weeks just before it came out,
yes,
if I'm recalling correctly, with it now out in the world, I think it's been just over a year.
Yeah.
How has the reaction been from fans? Like, obviously now in a live setting, are you seeing people kind of really connecting with those songs?
Yeah, it's been good. I mean, weirdly enough, we actually, for WOMAD, I'm playing a completely different album. So I've got a new album coming out in June.
Ooh.
And I kind of just, I wanted to kind of secretly debut it. And I don't know, like, I feel like it's so rare these days as artists to get the opportunity to kind of workshop your music in like real life. So, I mean, this next record's a bit of a departure sonically. So we're able to perform with like a strings quartet, and it's very kind of folky guitar bass stuff. So yeah, it was really nice to kind of start to presenting it like in person, because it's such a hard thing, I think, today. When you put out music, it's, you know, majority as it is of it is digital, so it's like it just goes out into this void. And I mean, things do well and it's these numbers, and like it's really hard to gauge how that feels. And especially with my art, I think, you know, I'm really concerned with trying to share stories. So like getting to share that with people in person for the first time versus seeing kind of numbers on a screen has been really exciting. So yeah.
That's awesome. I love that. It is, well, it is very true what you've just said in terms of you can get so many press updates. I feel like, as you said, numbers kind of given to you.
It's but just a void. It's like,
yeah, 100%.
So hard to know what any of that means.
It's nice to be able to have that connection with fans. Did you see any, and I guess it's also difficult to gauge as the artist on stage, you can see smiles, you can see that, but did you feel that people were resonating with these new songs you're playing?
This next project is it's kind of like, it's what I've been trying to do for a long time, but it's taken a journey to get here. But so I've always had this idea of I wanted to write a book where each song, which each chapter in the book is a song on an album, and they're kind of written in conjunction. And so I've had this idea for the longest time, but I did it, which is exciting. So the performance of it is playing the album top to bottom, and then between some of the songs reading excerpts from the book. Because so the way that it works is each chapter delves into like history and context. And yeah, I'd always had this idea of making this really three-dimensional project where the depth of how you could kind of sink into this work is just exponentially greater. Because, you know, my debut album was very lyrically dense. I think it was 6,000 words, a manuscript's like 70,000. So you've just got so much more space and time. And also, you know, the way that I think people learn is so different. I know for myself, depending on the day, I couldn't think of anything worse than picking up a book, and other times I don't want to listen to music. So the idea of kind of making them in conjunction and have them stand alone but speak to each other kind of allows it to hit different demographics. And I think the way as well that it can move people is so different. You know, the way that music sits in your body versus reading, it's such a different experience.
1,000%. It's something that I'm so curious about, and I'm very looking forward to reading when it does come out. It will come out, I imagine, as like a companion piece.
So the book comes out in last week of April, and then the album comes out in June.
Oh, beautiful.
So,
That's very exciting.
Yeah.
With that, I guess, was that a whole new challenge in terms of writing that?
Yeah,
because
totally.
Obviously you've got that, what's the word, I guess, like predefined... Well, actually, no, you don't really. As a musician, you can kind of do whatever you want, but there's that element of that you think you've got 4 to 5 minutes to kind of build a little world, do this. What was the first attempts in writing the book like? Was it kind of... Did you find it came easy to you?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, like, I kind of think of myself as... I'm always story first, you know? It's always about the story that I'm trying to communicate. So with the book and... the music, I mean, it was just about approaching story, and I had a really clear idea of what I was trying to communicate, and then I was just tailoring that message into the different mediums.
Yeah, right. With, I believe there was a new single,
Bonobar, yes.
out in January.
Yeah.
Is that part of the project?
Yeah, so that is... So Little Things, which is out in the world, is chapter one. Yeah. Bonobar is chapter two. And there's 9 chapters in total and songs on the record. So, yeah.
Are you able to, if it's okay, talk about the inspiration behind the track, Bonobar?
Yeah, totally.
And kind of where it came from.
Yeah, so Bonobar is a word that means change. And really, I think for me... So this record... stylistically or musically, I should say, and sonically, it's kind of based around after making Little Things, I found, I mean, how you were talking about how audiences resonate to the music, I found the way that people resonated to a song like Little Things was really different to like how they would resonate with some of the stuff on Sugar Coated Lies or Black Thoughts, because like the exact same messages over kind of guitars and folk music. I think it's just like a genre in which Australians understand stories are being told in a very different way to, I mean, our, you know, a magic trick is as good as the audience understands, and like a lot of Australian audiences might not have the same references or depth or love for hip hop in the way that, you know, other places do in the world. And so for me with this project, it was really about kind of taking what I learned from Little Things and seeing how that resonated with people, and then being like, okay, well, if I wasn't interpreting a Paul Kelly song and I was creating this story and this score for the book, like what would it look like, feel like, sound like? And I kind of found my way into picking up the guitar and writing this album. So that kind of Bun and Bar was one of the first ones where I had a guitar in my hands and started writing.
That's very cool. Do you think that that's going to now, with the live show that you played today, you playing guitar kind of a lot more being brought into the live aspect?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the whole record is me and a guitar and strings, basically. Yeah. And then there's some drums sometimes, but there's a lot of times where there's not. I mean, we're playing with an incredible band here, so I don't have to play guitar on every track, because we kind of felt like me being able to move and engage with the audience, that's like one of my strengths as a performer. But there are a couple of moments that feel really right on me on guitar, and it's just the beauty of this record is that, I mean, if the opportunity is there, we could play it with an orchestra. If it's not, then we could be me and a guitar alone. So it's kind of has the scope and scale to kind of shift and move. And the whole idea was that it could be put into like galleries, because each song and chapter has an artwork that's been made for it as well. So it'll activate into an exhibition. So I really wanted the music to be able to go as big or as small, dependent on the space that it was going to be put in.
That's very cool. I know, I think you and I might have spoken about it previously, but you are one of the, I want to say, the best Australian artist in terms of thinking about your project in that kind of capacity. I feel like a number of Aussie artists, regardless of genre, think about the songs and the songwriting, but I feel like when it does come to you, there's the thought of the sonics, the songwriting, the imagery of what kind of comes across, the video, all that kind of stuff. For you, does, is it that comes as the song is kind of coming, if that makes sense? Like when you're writing the song, do you kind of see the imagery or the ideas for the other aspects of it?
It's a case-by-case basis. So a lot of the times, so I think very much in words. I don't think very much visually. I only can kind of think visually almost in like flashcards, like it comes and goes, but I don't like live in a visual world. Like my visual world is what's happening outside of my head, and then inside my head it's just kind of this non-stop constant monologue or just talking to myself. And so I think sometimes I don't feel like I'm visually inclined, but as something is taking shape, I get really clear visual ideas and aesthetic, but it has to be kind of later on in the project, as it's like, as I'm really clear on what I'm trying to communicate, then it's like, oh, well, it's obvious. Like the image and visual aesthetic has to be this, because I think because I'm creating from necessity. Like I have a story that I feel like I'm desperate to tell, and so then as I refine and synthesize what that message is, then it's like, you know, it would be like if someone said, all right, you're telling a story about an orange, and then they were like, okay, now draw that story. You would draw the orange because that's the story that you're communicating. And I think I kind of think of the visual stuff in a similar way of like, okay, well, this is a story that I've communicated, and now this is what matches with it visually. And then I guess that's, I mean, I just love worlds. I love world building. Like I love video games, and I love like escaping into a world and sci-fi and reading and TV shows and film. Like I just love when an artist or in a group of artists just invest so much time and energy and intention in making decisions about a world that you then get to live in. And I mean, one of my biggest pet peeves is like in a video game when you hit a wall and it's like, okay, so that's the limit to where it was thought about. And I really want the art that I create to feel limitless for someone. So with this next project, with it being exhibition, with it being songs, with it being a book, it's like pick your own adventure, make it make sense for you, and then as far as you want to go, you can, you know, because the album and book stand alone, so you don't have to listen to the music, you don't have to read the book to understand either one of them. But if you want, there's like this whole other secret hidden level that you can unlock and delve into.
With that one, it kind of makes it very exciting for an album rollout, I imagine, for yourself, and then having all those different aspects of it. Does, and I might be getting too far ahead of myself with this. Do you then kind of sit there and be like, oh, like, shit, what do we do for the following album? Like, if you've
kind
done these,
of, I mean,
how do we one-up ourselves?
I don't struggle with ideas. It's just like executing it and budget and making it make sense. And honestly, like, the biggest thing for this, so I wanted to do this for my debut record. It was just like, because I always liked the idea of a book and an album sitting together, but because as well, for me, I'm really, you know, album rollouts and stuff, I feel like we've gotten to the point where it's like you've got a week and it's like you get into playlists and then you hope it does well. And so, like, for me, the story that I'm telling, like, especially working with little things, like, that song's 30 years old. Mm. And, like, it's been such a humbling experience to now have a song that will be sung forever. Like, that's a really rare and humbling and special thing to be a part of, even though it's a small piece. Obviously, some people still don't know my version, but, like, just being connected to that, like, I think it really opened my mind to what I'm doing as an artist. Like, and where we were talking about album rollout and stuff, it's like, whether or not people understand this in a week, it doesn't really impact how I'm going to go about crafting my art, because I'm trying to build, I guess, a legacy, and I'm trying to build like a catalogue of things that speak to the things that I'm trying to communicate. So, you know, with the book and everything, the hope is that that can then go and sit into curriculums, because if the book goes to curriculums, it means there's a new demographic of 15-year-olds coming to this work each year. And and for me, it's not just about getting it in front of people. It's that I really believe in what the story is that I'm trying to share is. So, and I think as well, like, we've gotten to such a place where it's like metadata and trying to market this, da, da, da. It's like, for, maybe I'm naive, but for me, I'm just trying to create something that I feel so excited to share with people. And 'cause I know for me growing up, and even to this day, like, there's just an overwhelming, like, we are oversaturated with content. And so it's like a hard, so hard to decipher what you're supposed to care about. And so for me as an artist, I'm just like, I just want to offer something that I care so deeply about and something that I would genuinely recommend to you as, like, not even as the artist. It's just like, I love this project. Like, how cool is this? It's a project, that's a book, an album, and an exhibition. Like, that's something that I want. Like, because I can tell that someone's taken the time and energy and labor of love to, like, manifest and actualize it. So I think that's where I'm really focused on. It's just, like, genuinely offering everything that I have to offer, and then I'll just... I guess I should say, in terms of am I stressed about the next album or anything, it's like being able to work in different mediums is so liberating, because like, now that I've just done this, I'm an author and I've got a gallery and I've co-composed a score and I've done this. So it's like, for me, my main thing is I want to tell stories, and it's just finding the right medium to put that story in. And so, because I kind of feel like I have that freedom, I don't feel stressed about, oh my God, I have to make another album in a year. It's just like, I will find the story that I want to share, and then if that's writing a TV show, if that's acting, if that's writing a book, then I'll put that story where it's supposed to be and just trust that, you know, that kind of stands the test of time.
100%. With this record coming out, and obviously, firstly, I know it's unfair to kind of ask the question of artists' favorite tracks, things like that.
Oh, so no, I've got favorites that, for sure. There's this one song on the album, it's called Shame. It was like one of the first songs that I wrote on guitar and I demoed by myself, and then it's like, it's just, I just like the fact that I can have a song, like the fact that I am the same artist that made Black Thought and then has made this song that's like straight acoustic guitar, me singing like a string quartet on, like it's just like, I like that because I get really excited when artists are kind of
ever evolving.
Yeah, totally, and not being, it being really dynamic, and I think the biggest thing for me with this record was that like it wasn't trying to do like a I wasn't trying to steal a genre or like do like I genuinely was like, no, like this is exactly the kind of music that I want to make, so like I fully committed to what that music is in my interpretation of it, and that was something that I feel really excited about because it's not like a, like I never wink like it's just like it's literally like a singer-songwriter folk album and it has a couple of verses here and there, but it's like that's just how I felt the story would best be communicated.
That's awesome. I know, well, I'm very excited after we've been talking about it today. I'm very excited to see the project and the book, the gallery. Might be a silly question, might be a logistics thing, and we can cut this out if not. Can we expect the gallery and kind of every aspect of it to be available around the country?
Yeah, 100%. Well, that's 100% the intention. I mean, the intention is to take this around the world. Because the whole idea that I had, like, it's like, okay, I'm an independent artist. So to everyone listening who knows or doesn't know what that is, it's like the market share for artists are owned by three labels basically, and so trying to cut through that when it's a really difficult thing, right? So for me, I'm so much more focused on the story and the journey, and I really feel like having this kind of point of difference where it's a book, it can be sitting in galleries and it's communicating this really specific story, but something that's also universal, right? Because colonization happened all around the world. The real hope is just to get on the ground and engage with people and communities. So the real hope is to sit this everywhere and anywhere. And that was the whole hope, is that, like, you know, knock on wood, we play it with an orchestra, but then also I'm like in a small gallery in Europe with me and a guitar and the work. So I really want to just let the work sit in many places and connect with as many people as possible.
I feel like the fact that you can have such versatility with music, obviously, and with only having heard a few of the songs, it speaks to obviously the strength of the songwriting in a way, in terms of like if you need that orchestra every single time, then the songwriting might not be there. So very, very excited to hear this record when it does come out. I'm aware that we are on a time crunch, and that we had a guest join us for part of the interview. As you might remember, we usually ask our guests what they're currently listening to. Yeah. Ziggy, what is Kind of on High Rotation for yourself?
I am listening to so much Bob Marley and the Wailers at the moment. I had this whole kind of, through industry connections, weirdly I got sent this tape of him recording demos in like a small house in London, and they're like not released, but like it's been like time travel. It's so weird. It's like it kind of almost feels like having the privilege of just like sitting in a room with him and a guitar and him just playing songs. So that's been like, I got that sent to me. I was lucky enough to get it sent to me a couple of weeks ago, and I listen to it every day. And it's just like, it's also so humbling as well, because like the songs are amazing, but there's sometimes where he just like laughs and is out of key, and like, and it's just like, it's just so
unfiltered.
Yeah, it's so raw and unfiltered, and it feels so humanizing. And I think especially, like, I grew up listening to so much Bob Marley, and, like, the impact on me was significant, but I guess kind of unconscious. And then making this whole record on a guitar and initially kind of coming it through with Paul Kelly, like, I feel like there was so much Bob just, like, in my mind of just, like, you know, I think the... And then even just his actual catalog, it's like... Been going back and listening to Exodus a lot, that record, and I mean he has a song called War, and like I just feel like it could have, I mean if I had the ability to write that song today, I would feel his ability to just and I feel like I weirdly feel like it's underappreciated. I feel like his songwriting is underappreciated, because I think like And don't get me wrong, I think Beatles, phenomenal, amazing, unquestionable, right? Like, and it's not like...
It's not to shit on them.
No, amazing. But I just feel like the way that, like, the reverence for, like, the Beatles and their songwriting, their chord changes, their all of this, like... But then, like, what Bob was doing and what he was saying and literally uniting a continent... Mm. I feel like there's this image of him of like being really high and like having dreadlocks.
Like the caricature
and, but it's really, it's been like a revelation and one that I knew, like I always knew, but I think coming back, I don't know if you've had this experience, but you know when you go back to albums like years removed and things that didn't hit you in the same way hit you completely differently. And I think in the context of who I am and where I am as an artist, it's just speaking so much to me. And you know, it's like he passed away when he was 37 and he made like 12 studio albums, and his final performance, one of his final performances, he was an opener at Madison Square Garden for the Commodores. And I just think it's like It's crazy. And he like blew them off the stage as well. It was crazy. But like, I think it's really interesting, right? Because we're in a time now where it's like, if you aren't the biggest artist at 12, then like give up. And it's like he literally opened as one of his last shows at 37. But then you look at his catalogue, you look at his impact. And I think that's something that I've been really trying to appreciate and instill within myself, of that like, if I really want to be someone who's telling stories, and it's about the journey, it's about the catalogue, it's about the legacy that you'll leave behind, as well as what you have here. So yeah, I mean, obviously Redemption Song is like the one that everyone talks about, but everyone should go listen to War by Bob Marley, especially now, like in the context of today. Listen to that song and just like, I don't know, I think it just he just opens your heart and speaks so directly to you. It's pretty insane.
Have you, and this is not to take away from the weight of his music, yeah, and a very quick question, have you seen the biopic
out? I haven't.
I've heard good things, and I think it's going to do a similar thing in terms of bringing his music back kind of round to people.
I haven't heard about it. Because that was the thing, is I... last year when I was going to do like... when I did like a version, I had like gone back into Bob's world, and that kind of like kept me stuck in there. And then I've been telling everyone, oh my god, I'm listening to so much Bob. So then someone heard and was like, oh my god, I have this thing I have to share with you. So no, I haven't seen it, but like, yeah, I would recommend everyone to go back to the catalogue, because it's like you also don't realize how, like, 12 albums is so many albums. And then you're like, oh, there's no way I'll know all of these. And then you listen to each album, and on every album there's songs that you're like, oh, this is Buffalo Soldier, this is No Woman, No Cry, this is Redemption Song, this is Get Up, Stand Up, this is No Woman, No Cry, this is Three Little Birds, this is One Love. Like, and it's just like, yeah, I weirdly feel like he's really remembered almost more as the idea versus like the transcendent songs and storytelling. And it's speaking much to me right now, because I think he also walked such a line between telling truth but also like unifying people. And I think that's a pretty I think being able to write like such universal songs as well that have gone across the world but like speak so specifically to you know, the troubles that he was facing. You should listen to Concrete Jungle as well. Do you know the story behind Concrete Jungle?
No.
So he went to London for one of the first times. When he went to London, he wrote Concrete Jungle. And there's this beautiful recording of him, I think in like the BBC studios, playing it with like the Wailers, and Peter Tosh is there, and like, it's just crazy. Like, the musicianship is just, and it's just the way, it's so interesting hearing him write about London as an outsider's perspective. And in a weird way, I kind of have it speaks so much to me, because like so much of my work takes me to these places that removes me from community and connection and you know, the struggle of displacement, but then also you're out here paving on the way and trying to do what you can. So it's been, I mean, I probably ranted a lot about it, but it's, he's been living in my head like rent free. So it's actually so the when you're like, I know we always ask this, I'm like, oh my god, I've been waiting to sell someone. Yeah.
Well, look, I very much appreciate the fact that it wasn't just a. Sometimes we get a. I'll just pull up my Spotify and it's this most recent thing. I'm glad that you had such a I guess a loaded answer, but also one that is obviously resonating with you so much. Yeah. And kind of absolutely love that. Tiki, thank you so much for coming back to the podcast. I appreciate it. Thank you for your time as well today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.